When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Welcome to the Wild Ones podcast, episode 28. This is a show where we chat about bike stuff. I'm Jimmy, and this week I'm joined by Francis and producer Emily. Good to have you back, Francis.
It's very nice to be back.
I missed you.
I enjoyed the two podcasts while I was away.
Oh, right. Okay.
I got to listen to them because I don't usually listen to them. Why would I? Because I was in it.
I thought you were going to say that you enjoyed not being here.
Well, I was kind of here, wasn't I? And I was in the wind tunnel with you, and I feel like I've been back for a while, but I'm newly back to the podcast and it's nice to be back.
Welcome back.
Thank you. How have you guys been? Emily looks distracted.
Sorry,
she's pressing buttons on a complicated machine.
Yep.
This is why I don't get involved. I'm trying to deal with
producing.
So levels.
The podcast actually gets made.
Yes.
Yeah, let's stop distracting her. What's been going on in cycling news lately? So lactate monitors. Sounds weird. Apparently, they're the most important revolution to hit the pro peloton since heart rate monitors. I bet they're going to be banned. So these are new devices that continuously track your lactate levels. Lactate is a substance made continually by muscle tissue and red blood cells. It's really important because it carries oxygen from your lungs to other parts of your body. When you exercise, the amount of lactate you produce increases. During vigorous exercise, there comes a tipping point where the amount of lactate you produce outpaces your body's ability to use and clear it. So it builds up in the blood and muscles, and you feel pretty rough. This point is often called the lactate threshold. When you're over that threshold, you'll typically see a decline in performance. So riders' lactate thresholds are often used at the top level to inform training decisions and base your zones and training plans on.
Do you know the difference between lactate threshold and an FTP?
They are very, very similar. FTP is there's different definitions. FTP, the way Coach Ken has put it to me, should be the power you can put out for an hour. So all of the tests, ramp tests, 20-minute tests, minus 5%, all of that is trying to replicate that. The best thing is doing a proper lactate test where you actually find out what you... But most people's lactate thresholds and FTPs are very, very similar.
Yeah, if my understanding is an FTP test is attempting to work out what your lactate threshold is.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's kind of like a mathematical... method for roughly trying to work it out, whereas an actual lactate test is going to tell you what the actual exact figure is.
Exactly. Well, you can do an FTP test at home, whereas even a coach has to have some sort of qualification or medical training because it involves pricking the rider's finger, taking a blood sample, or a very tiny, it's just a tiny blood sample while you're doing the test, in my experience. And then they'll put it through a little thing and it will give you a lactate reading every single, you know, every time you test it. So it's every 2 minutes or whatever. And you have to have you'll have to be qualified in some way to have a proper sharps disposal bin and all of this kind of stuff. So if a coach is doing that, they've gone through proper training, hopefully.
Yeah.
no one's expected to, you know, you're not going to do that at home, are you? So people opt for things like the Zwift ramp test because it's easier to do.
Yeah, I feel like it's the sort of thing that normal people are fine using an FTP, and the top end, the top 0.1% of actual proper professional athletes are probably always doing lactate tests anyway, but in a much less convenient way than this kind of new technology, which is popping up.
If they're around the team, I was on a training camp with Astana and did a couple of rides with them, and they were in the like early season testing phase, and they were doing both lactate tests and they were doing 20-minute tests up mountains as well in Calpe. So yeah, there'll be an outdoor test where they weren't checking lactate, and then the indoor one they were checking lactate. So there's a mix.
Yeah.
I guess what equipment they have, because the lactate test, they have to have the expert there. Mm-hmm. They have to have the sports scientist there or the coach or whoever it might be. So it's less repeatable and accessible. But if you're a pro and you want to, like, if they probably are testing a few times through the season, not always going to have a sports scientist guy there.
Yeah.
But yeah. We asked our pal, Will Gerling, who's the team nutritionist for EF Pro Cycling, what he thought about continuous lactate monitors and their potential impact on training and results. He told us that a lot of pro teams already monitor lactate levels closely, and they'll be doing that with the finger prick thing. Many will do this by doing stuff like ramp tests and taking frequent lactate samples through the test. So the only difference a monitor would make would be the more frequent readings. He said that he could see the benefits, as it gives you a much more accurate picture of where lactate is accumulating, and in conjunction with data on blood glucose levels, gives you a really good picture of a rider. This allows them to make more accurate, tailored recommendations in terms of training and fueling. I think it's going to make the lives of the team staff much easier, and the riders' lives marginally easier, because having your finger stabbed repeatedly is annoying.
It's very unpleasant, isn't it?
It's not great. Yeah, I mean, it would become like, oh, it's that again.
Yeah.
It's minor, but it would be annoying.
Mm. And the data is going to be, well, massive in comparison.
Yeah.
So I'm assuming...
Is it like a thing, like a diabetes blood sugar sort of deal?
I'm assuming that's the case. Yeah. So there's already monitors where you basically stick it on your arm. It looks like a nicotine patch, and mm-hmm. it monitors your blood glucose levels. There's a couple of different companies that are doing them to monitor health. There's some companies doing them for just like normal people being able to monitor their health. And I'm assuming what this technology is essentially that, but with the added option of also monitoring lactate, which for the very small number of people at the absolute top of the pyramid, it makes sense. It's the sort of thing that if I was still training, I would want, I definitely wouldn't need, but it's the sort of thing that I'd be like, well, that's cool to know.
Would it be worth it for the inconvenience of the thing? Like, does it feel invasive? My brain, while you were saying all that, was just going, how many years till Garmin released some sort of microchip that you put in your, like in your wrist, and then it just does everything that a wearable does, and it measures all your blood glucose and lactate and everything.
Well, it would have to be more than a chip. There'd have to be a lot of sensors in there.
Yes. Futuristic ones.
Well, the future is that we become cyborgs, so yeah.
Oh, cool. But potentially we already are cyborgs. I've never seen you not holding your phone. You're even holding it now off camera.
Literally not. And I'm also on camera.
You got two phones. I know you got two phones.
Neither of them I have.
One you're always holding with your third arm, which because you got a fake arm there.
My cyborg arm.
Yeah. When it comes to how much impact it will have, the pro community is divided. Astana's director of performance told news site Velo they'd be an evolution in training and account for huge fitness gains. Others say the in-training application may be limited, or that it'll take you years of context to truly understand and fully utilize the numbers processed. The UCI has an in-competition ban on these tracking devices. Of course they do. But there is no regulation on the use in training, which I feel like the benefits come from having them in training and outside of competition anyway.
I find it odd that someone would suggest that it will take years to utilize the numbers produced. I feel like surely there's enough knowledge and science already done on lactate for them to get instant benefit.
Mm-hmm. That does seem weird.
Why you seem to suggest that it was obvious that the UCI would ban it?
Because they ban everything.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, purely that.
They haven't banned heart rate monitors.
They haven't, have they?
No. Will it trickle down to the consumer market? I think yes, because it's the type of product that's going to be so easy for massive corporates to sell to normal people. The Zoe is a company that do like a blood glucose thing, and they're really driving it in like the health market space, and it's got a subscription model like everything does these days. I imagine this is going to appear in the consumer space. Is it needed? No. Will people buy it?
Probably.
Yes. it's one of those things, you know, if you're training a lot, it's the kind of thing where I'd be like, well, it would be cool to know. I definitely wouldn't need it, and I'm definitely not going to get it now, but it's the type of thing 10 years ago I would have been like, yeah, that's sick. Let's get on that.
If there was a thing that meant that I could know my FTP all the time without having to do a test and hurting myself on an indoor bike, then I would do it.
That is interesting.
But you still have to do a test, so.
Well, would you though? It's quite,
I don't know.
It's interesting that maybe that's where it'll evolve, is actually you can have like a 12-week block of training which doesn't require regular testing. And you're actually just training, purely training.
Garmin Watch or Garmin Connect, I don't know which one is doing the calculation, but Garmin doesn't, you don't have to do a test in order for it to kick out an estimated FTP. If it had this data as well, it could more accurately guess your FTP.
Yeah.
After every ride.
Well, arguably it isn't a guess.
It's a good estimate, very good estimate.
Well, with a lactate monitor, surely it's not an estimate, it's a factual figure.
Yeah, it's probably a formula.
Mm. Right, next we have former pro rider Philippe Gilbert. He has been found guilty of assault and battery along with three others after an incident on a training ride when he was still riding for BMC. The retired road race world champion was training on the course of Liège-Bastogne-Liège in Belgium with teammate Loïc Vliegen. They were close passed by a motorist. Loïc was thrown to his left when the driver close passed. They then caught up with the driver a short time later as he was sat in traffic. They had heated words and a physical row broke out in which Gilbert fractured his finger. All three, the driver and the two cyclists, were also found guilty of assault and battery over the fight, which actually happened in April 2016. So that's a long time ago. The driver was also found guilty of deliberately obstructing the traffic. Gilbert was awarded €500 and Loïc was awarded €1,000. Both cyclists were ordered to pay the driver and a passenger a token sum of €1.
Sweet.
I feel like you've probably got some road rage incidents from historic stories.
Nah, never any rage from my side. Although I wanted to, but I've been chased by people before after like they've closed past or shouted something out the window and you've caught them up. And then there was one time I was with Lawrence and a guy got out of his car and started chasing us on foot, which obviously was never going to go well for him. He ended up really far away from his car by the end. A long walk back.
I've actually got one. I ended up reporting someone to the police.
Really?
It was a long time ago. It's probably like, it'd be pushing 15 years now, I reckon, commuting in London. So it wasn't like on a training ride or anything. It was literally just commuting through Hackney on a single speed. And a white van guy decided that I had like cut in front of him or something or other, and then drove alongside me, called me the C word, then shouted at me, "I'm going to kill you," before swinging his van into me and hitting the curb. So I whacked the brakes on and he plowed into the curb. He then swung his van around into the middle of the road, blocking both sides of traffic, and started shouting at me for a while whilst I was just looking at him going, "Well, this is good. Excellent. Let's see what he does here." And then eventually he drove off. And I remember saying his number plate over and over in my head so I didn't forget it. And then I got to work. It was at the point where I was so desensitized to road rage that it just didn't bother me. I was just like, all right, cool, yeah, whatever, get on with it. I want to go to work. And then when I told some people in work, they're like, you've got to report this. Like, you have to report that. I was like, well, there's no point. Nothing's going to happen.
And you've forgotten the number plate.
No, I had remembered it.
Oh, really?
I reported it to the police. Someone then came over my house a couple of days later to do like a proper report. They then got back to me a week later and said, yeah, we tracked it down to a company that owns the van. There was no confirmation of who drove, so there's nothing we can do. I'm like, oh, all right, cool. So as expected, nothing happened.
Yeah, pretty standard response.
Yeah.
I like that. You do get desensitized, don't you?
Yeah.
I'm now at the point where I'm very calm when anything like that happens. And I definitely won't stop or even try to talk to someone.
It's pointless. Isn't
it is pointless. Mm. They're different people when they're behind the wheel of a car.
They're also...
It makes people bad.
We are also, as cyclists, very vulnerable. And therefore, it's in our interests to not argue with someone in a vehicle that can kill us.
Philippe Gilbert doesn't think so.
To be fair, his mate got pushed into. It said Loic was thrown to his left when the driver close passed.
Yeah, I get it. Yeah,
would that change your mind?
Yeah. I did get angry and shouted at a man in a video once when we were in Switzerland when he fully deserved it. And I put a camera in his face. It's quite good. Sometimes they just need to be told. But you have to assess the situation carefully.
I think it depends. Like, if I was riding with Francis and he had a close pass and came off his bike, I would probably laugh. If it was Emily, however... Well, if it was Francis, I would laugh and then make sure I got it on film. If it was Emily, I would probably instantly go into rage mode. And then I would double track because I know Emily wouldn't... Actually, I feel like there might actually be an example of this. I think there was one, wasn't there? Where I was really, really angry and you told me not to do anything. So I didn't do anything.
Yes, I would rather it not be escalated. Even if it's someone else's fault, I don't want to have to deal with the confrontation and your rage.
It never, nothing good can happen.
No.
No.
At all.
You are at a disadvantage in that situation. If someone's proved that they are ignorant, they're going to close past you and potentially hurt you. It's not a situation you want to be in.
No. But what I am going to start doing... So I'm ramping. So the winter in the Northeast is a bit of a beast and it's challenging. It makes me not want to commute at this point of the year. Come the spring, my plan is to commute into the studio a lot more by bike. And I'm going to put the Garmin Varia on my bike and I'm actually going to start recording it and start submitting stuff to the police. Because at the moment, there are lots of cases of the police actually doing stuff about it. Whereas 10, 15 years ago, I'm not even sure you were able to submit this sort of footage.
At least fines and things, isn't it? Yeah.
So that's my plan. I'm going to start submitting it in that way.
There was one instance. Do you remember we talked about this in a podcast a while ago where there was two young people on a moped that, they were going to rob us of our bikes, but we saw them in time and we stopped and we turned around and went the other way. If I had been with Tony and not you, we would have carried on riding. And that would have ended very differently. So there is situations where, I don't know. It would have been different.
I think probably what you would have discovered is actually they're having like a cheeky little spliff on the side of the road.
I wish I could believe that, but nah, they were 100% after the bikes.
They weren't.
They were.
They would. They were probably. Well, they might have been.
They are 100% were.
If you'd been with Tony, you would have found out for sure.
We would have found out.
Yeah.
Philippe Gilbert, so I mean, we have just said nothing good will come of it, but Philippe Gilbert and Loic have just been paid to beat a guy up.
Yeah, but I guess they'll have a criminal record.
Yeah, they also will have a criminal record, that's correct.
Do you think Philippe Gilbert cares as like one of the highest paid riders ever? Probably not.
I don't know, depends if he wants to become a teacher, I guess.
I wouldn't want to fight him.
DBA.
Why? DBS check.
Yes, CBA check, I called it. DBS.
Can't be us check. CBA check. I would have a CBA check. I would pass.
Here's a question for you. So you've just said you wouldn't want to fight Philippe Gilbert.
What cyclist would you want to fight?
Which pro cyclist would you want to fight?
Chris Froome.
Why?
I just feel like we've talked about him so much. That it would be a fun fight. It would be an interesting fight because he has got good reach, but he's also very, very skinny.
He is, yeah.
So I'm intrigued to find out what the result would be.
I think you wouldn't get anywhere near him.
Because he's too fast.
He'd just be picking you off at distance.
Sting like a bee.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, maybe.
I
want to see it.
Someone else we've been talking about recently that I think would beat you up is Geraint Thomas.
Definitely. Good. Compared to Chris Froome, he's like Ronnie Coleman.
He's so skinny.
Yeah, but compared to Chris Froome, he is like Ronnie Coleman.
Yeah. Yeah, well, he'd still definitely beat you up.
Mm.
Next up, Soudal Quickstep are getting some flack online for auctioning off Mark Cavendish's 2021 race bike. The team famously snubbed Cav from their Tour de France roster in 2022. He left the team soon after. Now they're doing a Christmas clear out of some of their old team kit, including Cav's spare S-Works. Bidding is currently up to 7,100 euros at the time of recording. Fans have dubbed it shameful. One said, kicking to the curb, but still tried to make a buck off his legend.
I'm the biggest Cav fanboy in the world, but it's their bike. They've paid him for the year. It's part of the package.
Well, yeah.
That bike is going to... 7,100 euros, definitely going to be like five times that by the end.
I agree. It's a team bike. It's not Cav's own bike. They're going to have lots of stuff and limited amounts of space, so it makes sense. And it also raises funds for them to be able to keep existing because pro teams cost a lot of money. And also, as a Cav fanboy, it gives you the opportunity to actually get something of Cav.
Yeah, no, it's a win-win-win. And I'm sure Cav does not care at all. Would you buy an X team bike? I wouldn't.
No, never.
Having ridden for a team, I wouldn't buy my own bike if it was being sold.
Well, they don't care about the bikes.
Nah, they do get trashed.
I would only get it, so I would buy like a Marco Pantani bike because I would never have any intention on riding it. That's the only time I would buy a team bike. It's not. I'm not buying it to be like, oh, I'll take it out every now and again. It's just going on the wall as an exhibition of something significant.
Yeah, it's cool.
A piece of art.
If you're going to ride
memorabilia.
It, you have the added complication of, yes, this is speculation, but a lot of, depends on the team and the sponsor, but a lot of the bikes that have been ridden in the World Tour probably aren't exactly the same product that you can buy in the shops. Do you want a potentially faster but very brittle bike? Maybe not.
Well,
plus it's probably been crashed like six times.
Yeah, like surely they're terrible at looking after them.
Hmm.
Do you think they get a set number of frames? They'll obviously have given a number of frames, but surely they have a system where it's like, you know, if we ruin one, you just get one in, one out kind of thing.
Yeah. So bikes get rebuilt all the time.
I think it's a spare bike as well that's up for sale. So who knows
probably
how much he's actually ridden it. Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
It may never have been ridden.
They'll be looked after pretty well, you know, with some care during in between the races and that sort of thing by the team. But actually during a race, everything goes wild, doesn't it? Stuff just gets chucked everywhere. You throw it on the floor, get a bike change, that kind of thing. So it depends if you want. So you just have to, you're hedging your bets.
But if you got one of Cav's bikes, surely you're not thinking like, oh yeah, I'm going to use that as my summer bike.
Probably not.
There might be a ride where you're like, oh, actually, I'm going to do a chilled couple of hours on these clean roads in perfect weather. Why not? I'll crack it out for some, for just the satisfaction.
It's what Chris did with, he bought from someone else. So it was like third hand. He bought Edvald Bosenhagen's Cervelo S5 or something.
Yeah.
And it came so specced out exactly how Edvald Bosenhagen had it that he had two different length crank arms on it. Because he's a leg length discrepancy, apparently. So it was exactly his, like, it wasn't just respect and, you know, they put a group set on. It was exactly how he had it during the season. It's quite cool.
That's cool.
Yeah. And then Chris had it repainted, which was weird. So it's probably not worth anything now.
I feel like he got it painted in, like, a team colorway, though.
Maybe. It was in a team colorway and he got it painted different.
I think he got it changed from standard team colors to, like, is he Norwegian? He is.
Oh, he got national champs.
It was national champs colorway or something like that, wasn't it?
Yeah. So that bike was worth £200,000 and now it's worth two.
Well, I don't know. I think it's probably still worth quite a bit. It's definitely not 200 grand though.
£2,000.
Before we move on from our news section, we have some personal news to share. Some people may already have seen our posts on social media, but Emily and myself have now officially sold Atticus and have moved on from it.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That's a lot of stress gone for you guys, I feel.
It is, yes.
How do you feel?
Good. Very good.
How do you feel, Emily?
Yeah, great. It's nice to be back to one job.
Yes.
Which is this job.
Yep.
I think we had a really stressful kind of personal 12 months in 2022. And if anyone follows Atticus, they'll have known that we changed quite a few things and we talked about it on a blog that we were trying to get a better work-life balance. It's just quite difficult. Jimmy and I are very good at working together. We enjoy working together. But also the problem with that is when you are 100% of your business, there is no time that we could take off together. And also when you go home, you're thinking about work and you're talking about work. And we just weren't very good at separating that. And it really got on top of us, I think, a lot, didn't it?
Well, you kind of can't when it's your business.
When it's your business. Now we work for your business. We don't give a damn come 5 o'clock. Don't care.
It's good.
Yeah. It's your problem, not ours.
Yeah. I just think about it all the time.
No, but do you know what? It is different when it's your thing, isn't it? Yeah. And like, it's a bit grass is always greener. There's a lot of freedom that comes with working for yourself. But actually, when you get to a point where you have a lot to do in the day, there isn't freedom anymore. You have to keep turning that cog, or the cog doesn't turn. And I guess we were just overworked and we lost the passion a little bit, but we found someone that was.
More passion.
Mm-hmm. More passion.
More energy. And more footwork.
More footwork, indeed, yeah. So
yeah, you guys seem very relaxed.
Yeah, it's good. It's an end of an era. And I think it's a nice personal achievement to know that we built something that was bigger than us and that was sellable as well. Like,
cool. It's still got Atticus clothing kit brand, and they have new owners now and who seem really nice. And it's going to continue to exist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and still sort of small scale. It's a couple again, and they own a jewellery business already. So they're very well versed in business and cycling. So,
and e-commerce, which is
e-commerce.
A very modern style of business.
Yeah. You're going to carry on wearing Atticus?
Yeah, for now. Or at least for next year. I guess you could say I'm a brand ambassador.
You're a brand ambassador.
We have drawers and drawers and drawers of the stuff. It would not make sense to change.
Well, I'll be honest. There was a point where I was like, oh, I can wear other stuff. And I'm like, well, I've designed this stuff to be like perfect for me. So
it's exactly Jimmy sized.
There isn't going to be other stuff that I get that I like more. So it makes sense to keep wearing it. Mm.
I know what you're going to be wearing. I had a little chat with Dan. Sneaky photo. It's full flesh-coloured suit.
I can believe that.
Yeah, it's good. With a little a leaf over the private parts.
Well, you're wearing clothes. You don't need the leaf.
Okay, fully naked.
Well, you're not actually naked. It's just flesh-coloured.
No, it'll be exact replica of what's underneath.
Jimmy's like a Ken doll, though. There's nothing there.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's fair enough. That's why you're more aero. Mm-hmm. Oh, more on that in the wind tunnel video coming up.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Now on to our big question of the day. Week. What cycling stuff are you asking for Santa this year?
So, I'll go first on this one.
Did I just say for Santa this year? I think I did.
You did.
I'm not getting anything for Santa.
From Santa.
Even though he is real.
So, I'm going to get Santa. I'm just continuing your gibberish.
Okay.
We haven't actually uploaded the video. So the video hasn't gone live yet, but it will very, very soon. We're making a video about nearly the entire Garmin Tax range. So indoor trainers, lots of them. They also just launched a new one, which is the Neo 3M. What I learned from making that video is there is two products that are right at the top of that space that I have fallen in love with. So I'm going to get Santa a Tax Neo 3M or the Tax Neo bike, because it is absolutely sick. I thought I was going to hate both of them, but I love them both.
Which one would you get? I honestly never was on team Tax bike, Tax Neo bike, but now I've tried it. I'm like, oh,
so
I get it now.
I'm going to hazard a guess that Santa doesn't ride a bike.
No, we're not. This isn't the game. It isn't presents for Santa.
We've ruined Emily's podcast again for 28 weeks in a row.
I would like a bike, the Neo bike, but it's $3,500, and I like sitting on my bike. Yeah. When you get your bike dialed in, it just feels nice to be on it, to have your shifters slightly worn, your saddle kind of, you know, just everything is exactly yours and how you ride out on the road.
Wear in, like,
yeah, definitely.
Shoes.
I do. I think they do. So my preference would be to put my bike on it. If I was like a Chris Hall, our mate who's an adventure cyclist, he turbos an offensive amount because he rides an offensive amount. If I was doing, you know, 5-10 hours a week on a turbo consistently, it would make sense to have the bike, the Neo bike, because of the wear on your drivetrain.
Yeah, it would. Yeah,
you know, like Chris's bikes are all super top end bikes. The amount of wear on a Durace cassette and chain on a turbo that he's getting is huge. So get a bike.
Well, I mean, different cassette. You'd have a cheapy cassette on there.
Actually, yeah, you're right.
But you're still shifting. I mean, if you shift, if you're not erg mode all the time, you still wear stuff out.
Well, yeah, exactly.
A little bit on the chainring, but yeah.
So in that scenario, bike, but Neo 3M for me, please.
Cool.
I want the...
That can be arranged.
The Rocky.
Well, you may borrow one for 5 days from Cade Media if you want it.
Thanks.
No worries. So I've asked him for... every year, I just buy 365 pairs of white cycling socks.
Yeah.
And then wear them once and throw them away each day.
Yeah.
Same with shoes as well. I asked Scott for 52 pairs of white cycling shoes, and then after a week, obviously they're too dirty, so just throw them away.
You know, some people are going to believe you on this as well, don't you?
Yeah, people seem to believe a lot of things that I say that are in jest, but that's their problem. So I'm going to ask for a replacement for all my white shoes and socks, because obviously you want to look like Vanderpoel does it, doesn't he? Every cyclocross race, white shoes and socks. They are definitely not the same ones from the week before.
Mountain bike race. Speculation, they might be.
Well, he's really good at Vanish.
Well, yeah.
Oxy action.
Well, might be, yeah.
Yeah, no, true. That's what he spends most of his time doing.
You just jet wash it and then dry it.
Emily, what are you getting Santa this year?
I don't know if it's a Christmas present, but something I would like in 2024 is a new road bike that fits. Because what I have come to finally accept is that my bike does not fit me. It is far too long. And I've secretly known this since the moment I bought it. It's a Canyon and they have a size chart. You put in your measurements and they tell you what bike to buy. And I did not want to buy that bike, so I bought the one up. And the reason I didn't want to buy it is because the one they suggested had 650B wheels.
That is annoying.
I just didn't want to deal with it. Like, Jimmy buys all of our inner tubes and I'm not responsible for that. And I don't want to be responsible for that. Whereas if it was a different inner tube, I would have to deal with it. And I didn't want to. So I bought the bike and I've had it for a long time now, probably since 2015. Something like that, a long time. And I've dealt with it. And I think probably only since getting my gravel bike, I've started to ride my road bike less and less and less. And I've done not much riding this year. And I've come to realize it just doesn't fit. So I am going to sell it. And I don't know what I'm going to replace it with yet.
But cool.
That's my plan.
Is this confirmed? You're actually going to get rid of it?
I am going to get rid of it. Yeah, I think
time.
It puts you off riding it if it doesn't fit.
It does,
and you're uncomfortable.
I love it. Love it for so many reasons. It's so fun and like it feels light, which for me means it feels easier. You know, I don't have a lot of strength. I'm a small person, and it just felt like nice and nippy and cool on hills and all that kind of stuff. But like, so we took it to Tenerife. We climbed Mount Tada.
Yeah,
it took us hours and hours, and by the top of the climb, you know, I was in a bent over position on the bike and then I got off and I could not stand up straight. My back was ruined and I was in bed for 2 days afterwards.
Pretty much the rest of the holiday.
There was a point, so my mum's a masseuse and I made her, she had like an emergency call with Jimmy and gave Jimmy some like massage techniques to do on me. And then I was fine and we went back up the climb and then my back was ruined again. So I just need to get a bike that fits.
Yep. It totally is possible to get a 700c wheel on a bike that small does one. Fit small people.
Yeah.
James has just done it with a guy called Giles. Our friend,
saw bike that.
Fitter. Yeah, so he has a achondroplasia, so a type of dwarfism. And he has to have a much smaller frame than you have to ride. Still has 700c wheels because it's, you know, you want tire choice. It's not just inner tubes. There isn't as many tires to choose from as 650B. And then, you know, spares on a ride. If you get through the two inner tubes that you have, it's just annoying, isn't it?
Yeah.
For people.
Did Bike Fit James have to go custom on that?
That is custom, yeah.
It's savage, isn't it?
It is an extremely small frame.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
There should be, and I'm confident there are options out there which are stock bikes.
Mm. Not many though. That's
not enough.
Part of the problem, isn't it? You know, there isn't that much out there.
Yep. Hopefully it will change. We'll keep moaning about it on the internet until it does.
Mm-hmm. Right. Time for another round of overrated or underrated. I'm going to read out a list of things and you're going to tell me if they are overrated or underrated. So this first section actually starts with a bit of news and it's on Canyon Bikes. So a new report shows that their profits fell by over £26 million this year. They made a loss of £1.7 million in the first 9 months of 2023, and they have blamed discounting. Apparently, rival brands were offering price cuts on products, so they did the same to try and compete. They are saying that they actually sold 23% more bikes this year than before, with customers taking advantage of those discounts. They also apparently had production shortages on popular models.
So are they overrated or underrated?
Yeah, what's the question?
Overrated or underrated?
So, are Canyon Bikes overrated or underrated?
Really good for the money. I think they've got better as well.
Yeah, they've always been good for value.
They've always been really good for value.
They've tested the big traditional bike brands for value, and as a result of that, have sold a hell of a lot of bikes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. They do some things that I find very frustrating. Like they, along with a couple of other brands, are the kings of proprietary parts, i.e. they design stuff that's only compatible with their things, so it makes it hard to put whatever bars or whatever seat post you want on a bike because they have their own sizes.
Really annoying ones with the bars that like come apart in the middle. They've tried to make those handlebars that can be extended and reduced in size by not that much. And it's just annoying.
I do think they are overrated.
Because they're very popular.
But I do think they have forced the industry to start doing things better.
Yeah, only just overrated.
However, the industry is still not good enough. And there's still lots of stuff that needs to happen.
We are in agreement.
Yes.
Fixed gear bikes.
Overrated. Actually, they're not anymore because no one cares about fixed gear bikes. So they're appropriately rated, which is not at all.
What are you talking about? That's great. I love my fixie. When I'm down in London, go to my parents' house to stay, and I have a fixed gear bike there. It's the only bike I have.
It would be better if it was single speed.
Nah, there's something about riding it fixed, which is...
horrible.
Nice. It just is nice.
It's nice.
So underrated. Underrated for me. However, you would not be able to ride it around the Northeast.
Well, you would. You just have to put a really weird gear ratio on it.
Tiny gear, yeah, yeah. It would be kind of annoying.
And then you'd have to take your feet off the pedals when you then descend into town.
Yes.
Whereas if it was single speed, you'd have no issues.
On your brakeless fixed gear down straight into Newcastle.
Well, it can't be brakeless. It's illegal in this country.
Yeah, yeah, never.
I used to have a single speed that I've probably ridden that bike more than any other bike ever because I used to commute on it for many years and I absolutely loved it. And I think single speed is better than fixed gear. And that is going to upset a lot of fixed gear people.
I mean, it's more practical.
Yeah, it
is.
It works better in every sense.
But some things aren't logical, Jimmy. Some things are just...
it's overrated.
I was going to say romantic.
No, yeah, I see that. But partly of that was like trendy marketing. Courtesy of was it Rockstar Games that sponsored Red Hook Crit or something?
Yeah,
like that?
Yeah, they did.
Like, they used to have bonkers sponsorship. It was
Rockstar,
a
genius with their marketing. Can we just say that? They dropped the GTA trailer, which everyone's been waiting for ages for. And then in Netflix shows at the moment, I've noticed people wearing Rockstar t-shirts. Mm. So they're just like reinforcing it in your brain at the right time. They're, as a company, they're on it.
It's very clever.
Yes.
Right, next suggestion is by Ian. Cycling-specific holiday packages.
Wow. Never done one.
I don't think they are overrated, but I do think they are overpriced.
Right, yeah.
The service that you get on some of them is absolutely phenomenal, and therefore I think you'd have an amazing time. But they always seem to be priced so aggressively that it just isn't worth the money.
Yeah.
The only, I think it probably technically falls into this space, but it kind of doesn't. Like Hot Chili London to Paris. To do it is expensive, but to be fair, that one is absolutely sick.
All of the Hot Chili events are spot on. And the London to Paris one, I think, is the least amount of value for what you get. And it's because, I know why, because I'm friends with the guys who run the company. The hotels in France are just astronomically expensive. Mm-hmm. And around the Tour de France, even more so.
Of course, you have
to end up, you're basically paying for that and the experience you get at the end of the ride, where you get to Paris, you stay in a nice Marriott hotel or whatever, and then you spend some time on the Champs-Élysées. So what you're paying for is that as well. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you, historically, I don't know if they still run these events, but Cape Roulette, which is the one in South Africa, yeah, you have to buy the flight. But once you're there, everything is, you know, so much cheaper compared to the Paris one. And you get more days of riding, really nice hotels, really nice food. And it's a way better deal. So you can pick and choose. But a lot of people want to do, and a lot of companies pay for, you know, the big charity ride, London to Paris. It's iconic, isn't it? Mm-hmm. But they don't do it anymore. They're on the last one.
Oh.
Yeah.
We did that. We all did that together, didn't we? London to Paris.
Yeah, it's great. You know why they've, I think they've stopped it because of Brexit.
Yeah.
And there was issues with getting the bikes across the channel. Because they don't go with you. You go on a ferry, they chuck all the bikes onto a big truck, and then the DHL truck or whatever takes them across, and they like couldn't deal with the paperwork. Mm. It was just monster job.
Because it's technically an import.
There's also a lot more passport control as well, because we're no longer members of the EU. So there was always a really finite time to get on the ferry, wasn't it? Whereas now you assume you can't get on that ferry until you've gone through passport control.
I think so, yeah.
We went on a cycling, well, it was a triathlon camp, wasn't it?
We used to go on. That was outrageous value.
Is this where someone crashed on his face on like the first 5 miles?
Yes.
On one of the occasions, yes. But let's not tarnish it with that.
It was a great holiday other than that. So we did it
like 3 times or something rather.
Yeah. It was amazing value. I basically learned to swim at that camp in an adult fashion.
What's the one that you pay lots of money and you go for a really bougie ride or a series of rides over a few days with like Mark Cavendish and go on DJ decks and stuff?
I have no idea what you're talking about.
What is it? They do an Ibiza one. The name has gone out of my head.
You sure it's just not a party and he's just doing a bit of training?
Yeah, basically. But so that one's like really expensive, but you get like, it's all Michelin star food and stuff like that. If I had money to do it, I'd want to go on one like that. You might as well just go big, right? Otherwise, I have the experience and know-how to do a cycling holiday, to organize a cycling trip myself. Don't need an unorganized thing. So I'd rather just grab a couple of mates, rent a villa, and then go to a place that I know. Mm. So, unless it was an experience like that kind of thing, then I wouldn't bother. But not everyone's in that situation. Some people need to be led on the roads and showed the roads, and that's totally fair.
Suggested by Jake, photochromatic lenses.
Underrated.
Massively underrated.
I think they're brilliant.
Yeah, they're so
good. If I could only have those in my glasses, I would. Particularly when you're making, this is niche, but when you're making videos and you need to be able to see a camera and expose things right, most of the lenses on cycling glasses that aren't photochromic are too dark. So I often find they're just too much. And I'm looking at the camera like, oh, I can't do it.
I use clear lenses quite a lot, surprisingly. Mm. I probably shouldn't in summer, but then I always have a photochromatic for summer. It just makes sense, especially like we ride a lot in and out of like tree line. So having something which adapts to that just makes sense.
I like clear lenses and I don't think there's a problem with wearing them in summer.
Well, there technically isn't, no.
Because your eyes do adjust for bright light. What's more, daylight during the day, sunlight during the day directly in your eyes is a good thing. It keeps you awake. So there might be an argument for not wearing sunglasses that are super dark anyway.
Next, a suggestion from Cyril, which is flat pedals.
Underrated.
Elaborate.
I love riding bikes with flat pedals. It's fun. Particularly off-road, because you can just take your foot off and skid around corners and stuff.
It definitely gives you a level of confidence. Because I had a BMX in London just for lols. I actually did the urban hill climb race on a BMX where I had road cleats on it. Mm-hmm. So I've ridden a BMX with road cleats and with flat pedals.
Nice, yeah, yeah.
And when I was trying to learn how to manual, if you were clipped in on a bike whilst trying to learn how to manual, it would just be absolutely terrifying. The amount of times I decked it anyway, and that's with flat pedals, it would have been like quadruple that if I had cleats on. Not obviously you wouldn't on a BMX anyway, but that's what you gain from flat pedals is just this level of confidence that you're on it and you're not, or you're not on it, rather mm-hmm. than being bonded to the bike.
Yeah.
There definitely is someone that does the national 24-hour time trial that is very competitive, that does the entire race on flat pedals.
I wonder what shoes he's wearing underneath the overshoes, because he wears full aero overshoes mm-hmm. still.
Yeah.
And then his shoes underneath look like they're aerodynamic. So maybe he's got some special shoes.
Perhaps, yeah. I'm sure there is some studies around the benefit of clipped in pedals on certain things. And I think once you start going really long and the powers are less high in terms of like efficiency, it's not, it kind of like there's diminishing returns.
Yeah. It's more like the benefits are really when you're accelerating and mm-hmm. like if you're working the bike out of the saddle to catch up with someone,
yeah,
you'll be like, oh, if you're on flat pedals, it would be horrible.
Yeah.
But yeah,
well, going back to the triathlon camp that we used to be in, they had a rule that if you didn't have road cleats, so for some people that would arrive, everyone would always have cleats, but some people would ride in SPDs, so mountain bike cleats.
Yeah.
If you had SPDs, you were not allowed to compete in any of the sprints.
I think that's fair.
So the theory is you're more likely to pull your foot out of a pedal, in which case you're more likely to pull down the people around you as well as crash yourself.
It's why I tighten up my pedals so much, mm-hmm. particularly for mountain biking. There's nothing worse than pulling your feet out of your pedals when you've just gone off a jump because you can't get them back in, you know, whereas flat pedals would be fine. But flat pedals, that I reach a point off-road where if I'm doing a proper bit of mountain biking, in inverted commas, which is technical, I much prefer being clipped in because I know my feet aren't going to do anything weird.
Yeah.
And flat pedals then don't feel right to me. But there's a mix in the world of mountain bike.
But yeah, mountain bike people will use really large pedals with studs in and then mountain bike shoes, which it all just grip. It's like, it's not like just using a bog standard flat pedal with a normal pair of trainers. Yeah, yeah, they're designed to grip. Plus, mm-hmm. I actually learned from one of my mates, Billy, who used to do a lot of mountain biking very competitively. There's actually like flat pedal technique.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Where
yeah.
you like position your heels and your angles in different things so that if you're doing a jump, you grip it in a different way and stuff, which it's a whole different skill, isn't it? Suggested by Kevin, classic electric guitars in brackets, Fender Strat, Gibson Les Paul, etc.
Yes. I mean, underrated.
Just yes, give them to me.
Yes, I want them. Yeah, yeah.
Well, you're definitely a vintage Strat person.
I only have classic guitars.
Classical guitars.
Oh, no, wait. No, I've got those weird, well, they're still Strats, yeah. Got the hamsters ones, haven't I?
All right, you're the guitarist. Talk about guitars.
The guitar design has not changed very much, and the original designs are still the best, which is mad. Like, isn't it crazy? Leo Fender, who's the guy who started Fender, and he designed the Telecaster, I think it was originally Broadcaster, Telecaster, Stratocaster, and they're still the guitars that everybody uses on stage. Okay, yeah, there's like metal versions, but still same sort of body shape, He got it right almost first time. It's really cool. I love a classic guitar.
Cool. Keep sending in your suggestions to wildonespodcast@cademedia.co.uk and we might read yours out in the next show. Next on to Fluff Up of the Week.
I know what this one is. I laughed so much.
I didn't. So we...
You did. You were laughing as it happened.
Not surely not as it happened, because I thought my life was going to end. So earlier this week, we filmed a video which is coming out in a section of a video which is coming out in the next couple of weeks. And we were very fortunate to spend some time in a wind tunnel. What I didn't expect was to literally end up in the wind tunnel. So it's a very weird looking thing. There's basically a room in the middle where the bike is and looks like a normal room attached to two massive chambers. The one chamber has a huge fan in it. The other chamber is the thing that the air is like sucked through. And the whole construction of that is this like nice wood. It's like a big wood tunnel thing with a big slope. It looks like a slide with then again, some like mesh and metal things at the end of it. And the lovely people at AeroCoach were like, oh yeah, you can go down into it. You can just walk down into it and take some photos or some video shooting back up. At which point, when you were on the bike, I was making my way down to shoot some footage and I was like, oh, I haven't got shoes on. And you were like, oh, you'll be fine. And as I walked onto one of the panels of wood, I proceeded to end up, my legs came away from me because it was actually really steep. And I was sliding down this piece of wood towards, I don't even know what, it's some big metal mesh thing that I was pretty much convinced I was going to write off a £1 million wind tunnel. Fortunately, and I'm actually going to credit it to the silicon strap on my Garmin watch, the only thing that would grip.
That's the maddest product placement we've ever had for Garmin.
I was literally sliding down thinking, oh, I'm going to end up with a lot of splinters here. Oh. I didn't end up with any. And I could see the like silicon of my strap just like digging into the wood. And I was just like, this is literally going to save my life.
I would have died. I can't wear the silicone strap because I have some sort of silicon allergy, apparently. So I've got the nylon one.
So you would
I would have gone off the slide, out the back of the wind tunnel, into all the circular saw blades, which is at the bottom.
Well, my vision of what that mesh thing is at the end is like razor blades. And actually you pass through it and you get like purified. That's what I was thinking was going to happen.
And then they make you into a meat cube.
You know, there's definitely horror films where there's some kind of like laser thing that as you pass, you come out in like cubes.
Resident Evil.
Is it Resident Evil? Yes. Yeah.
And then his face...
So that's what I was expecting to happen, but saved by my watch strap.
Swipe up, use code Jimmy10 for 0% off.
actually, you started laughing or saying, basically, one of the guys from the aero tunnel ended up running out to see what was going on. And the weirdest bit, I was like, oh, they're going to go absolutely ballistic with me because I'm just like laughing. Trashing a wind tunnel. She literally looked in, laughed and just walked away as I'm like on my side at the bottom of this wind tunnel trying to work out how I get out. She literally just laughed at me and walked away.
She's like, Jimmy is broken, not the tunnel. Everything's fine.
So yeah, fluff up of the week.
Let's finish up with a listener's takeover. We got an email. First up, we got an email. There's two here. First up, we got an email from Christopher with the subject line, Weird Dream About Jimmy and Francis. Hello, Jimmy, Francis and Emily. I had a dream last night. I was out and about on my bike and Jimmy stopped me. He wasn't on a bike. He was a pedestrian wearing a bin bag, which he had painted on the words, "This is a bin bag" in neon colours.
That is quite me, to be honest.
This is just one of my dreams. It is. I have this. Francis was filming a bit where Jimmy was promoting the benefits of wearing bin bags, explaining how they're eco-friendly, though I'm not convinced about that, and how you can customize them, for example, painting on them or using glitter to jazz them up.
That's the mistake. Everyone knows I hate glitter.
They're waterproof. You can easily ride your bike wearing one. Really? If you get too warm, it's easy to take it off and stow away in a pocket.
True.
Jimmy looked incredibly happy throughout. Francis didn't say a word. Though he did keep chuckling from time to time. Then I woke up feeling confused. Keep up the good work, Chris. That
exactly
could be real. Us filming a video.
That's so close to real.
Are you sure
life.
He didn't just see us out filming? Did we do a bin bag bit?
Well, maybe you it's the poncho that? From one of the Wish videos or the Timu video, whatever it was. That is nearly real life.
The structure of dreams is wild, isn't it? That is exactly the kind of dream I would have.
Yeah.
The details are like, that's your brain just make... anyway.
I remember reading that thinking, this is the kind of story Francis would tell me on the way into work.
Yeah. Well, I tell you my dreams quite often, don't I?
Yeah.
Often things like that.
Like that, yeah.
Yeah. Question from Nikolai. Hey, guys. I have a personal dilemma. Should I wrap my bike in helicopter, brackets, protective tape? I bought a new carbon bike at the end of the season, but I haven't ridden it outside yet. Just spinning the rollers indoors for now. It's got a really nice blue paint job, which I wouldn't want to damage too much, especially considering how many scuffs and scratches I got on my first alloy bike. I do make peace with imperfections on all of my stuff eventually, but I doubt the carbon will gain any nice patina over time. However, I dread doing it myself. Remembering how tedious the process was, even on something like a smartphone dealing with the air bubbles and dust, I don't think I'll be pleased with the results after a first try. There are companies and bike shops around my area that do this professionally for cars and bikes, but the price tag for covering the whole frame is ridiculous in my opinion, some starting from around 200 GBP. Covering just some of the parts feels like a half measure, and I'll probably lead to inconsistent color fading patterns after a couple of summer seasons. What do you think? Is it worth it? Have you ever done it yourself? Love the content. Love from Siberia.
Cool. Okay, so I have experience of this, as does Emily. We wrapped some of our bikes in the past, and I 100% would never do it myself because it is a hell job. And you really need to find someone that has that level of attention to detail, because there's so many bends and curves on bikes that it's just like, I just wouldn't want to do it. My closest experience of it is wrapping a Cannondale Cadex with a camo pattern, yeah, which we talk about in our roasting our rides video, and it was very unpleasant and it looked rubbish, and doing it with this protective film thing would be a nightmare. I haven't done it going forward. I don't do it anymore on my bikes, partly because I just don't care anymore. It was a couple of bikes that I had that were like really nice and they had particularly amazing paint jobs. And I was like, I want to protect this. But I'm also the kind of person that is quite happy using stuff and destroying it. And, you know, well, not destroying it, but, you know, I'm happy for stuff to have war scars on because it's been used. And therefore, if I chip a bike, I don't really care anymore. I think there's what I didn't like about it, and this is probably just me being a bit overkill, is on certain bits where it's been wrapped, because it's not a perfect wrap of every single bit, you will get this little edge of where the wrap film stuff ends. And I didn't like that. Even though you practically can't see it, it just got into my head and I didn't like it.
They do it in sections. So like the stairs will be one piece and the top tube will be another piece. So yeah.
Yeah, definitely the people we did. I don't know if that's moved on from since then. But I don't do it currently. I think there might be issues with removing it because obviously it's like fully stuck to the frame. I think you have to use a proper technique to remove it, maybe even a heat gun. Otherwise it can pull paint off of the bike. It kind of comes down to whether the person is going to be more upset with a little mark, a mark on their bike, or it always being there / seeing little bits of edges of the film.
And paying £200 or whatever it costs to get it protected.
I think my opinion now is if my bike gets some scratches and damages on it, cool.
How much does it cost to get a frame repainted?
Repainted?
I guess that's a how long is a piece of string question.
Yeah, it's going to be a minimum of like £500. If it's carbon, it's going to be even more again.
How much was your guy across the road in the garage?
Yes, bear in mind that doesn't factor in the sanding of the frame, the prep of the frame.
It does, because you tried to do it, but you did it so badly you had to redo it again.
No, we didn't redo any of it.
Really?
Yeah, I ended up... You did like an 10% eighth of what was actually done. So the actual spraying of that bike was, I think, £300.
Okay. I was trying to factor that into my decision, whether you just get it repainted.
If your bike
it's like new, isn't it?
Is steel or alloy, you can get it shot blasted / sand blasted. So the prep of it is nothing at all. And you could even get it powder coated. So if it's a metal frame, in most cases, it's going to cost you a few hundred quid to completely change the color of the bike, which is something I've done in the past. If it's a carbon frame to get it resprayed, I'd be amazed if you find someone willing to do it for 500 quid.
And if you want something nice, it's even more.
Yes. And it would only be 500 quid because they're probably rushing the prep. And the prep is what's going to make the paint good for the long term.
Yeah.
So £200 to protect your paint isn't a lot of money if you don't want to potentially be spending £1,000 to respray it further down the line.
I've ridden carbon bikes with nice paint jobs extensively, particularly like my gravel bike, through loads of crap. The only thing that ever really scuffs the paint in a way that is undesirable is bags on bikes, in which case you could put a protective thing just underneath where the bags are going to rub. Everything else doesn't ever end up massive and a problem.
Yeah, of course.
Unless you have a terrible crash, but in that case, it might just be written off anyway.
Yeah, it's not going to cause a problem, but some people are not going to want any marks on their bike.
Well, it's a bike.
So either protect it or don't protect it.
Yeah, don't bother.
That's where I am now, to be honest.
Yep.
Keep sending in your questions, stories, and fun stuff to wildonespodcast@cademedia.co.uk. Before we go, we want to ask you a favour. If you liked the episode, please take a moment to give us a 5-star review or leave a like and comment if you're watching it on YouTube. It doesn't take long, but by doing this, you help us boost the profile of the podcast and we can continue to put it out for free. Don't forget to subscribe. Thank you very much. Goodbye. Is this Christmas or not Christmas? Not Christmas.
Next week is Christmas.
Have a wonderful Christmas, everyone.
Happy Christmas.
If you celebrate. And if not...
Holidays.
Have a wonderful time.
Bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend. Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for Ways to Win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt. So throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.